Welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I'm Mona, and I was married for 30 years, in that relationship for 32, and we didn't find out until our 29th year of marriage that we were a neurodiverse couple. And I've been divorced since 2018, and together we have an amazing adult daughter who's thriving and doing fantastic. And today I have a guest on the podcast who is not autistic, but is neurodivergent. He has ADHD, or he's ADHD, like me. We are going to talk a lot about how that has impacted his relationship and being a parent and a lot of other things in his life. So I'd love to welcome Ryan Mayer, who is a ADHD coach. Ryan, welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast.
Mona, it is so great to be here. And I just want to make sure you get a shout out on your own podcast, because I love the approach and the perspective that you have on your own journey, where you say that, you know, you talked about your daughter and how she is an adult and she's thriving. And as a parent of young kids, that just made me smile. So I just want to let you know that.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, of course, we all have struggles. And there were things that I didn't understand about her. She is very, very much like her daddy. Mm-hmm. And I think I had been coaching her entire life, and she'll tell you that. And still, there's probably some coaching going on. But she really is thriving, and she's amazing. And she'll be turning 27 next month. Woo! That's great. Yeah, or in 2 months. Yeah. So, Ryan, I would love if you would share with the listeners a little bit about kind of how you came across the idea that you might be ADHD, and maybe talk a little bit about how that discovery kind of impacted your relationship with your wife.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's really important to know is that I knew about my ADHD about 20 years before I ever met my wife. And it's still important, I think, for a lot of people to hear this, especially if, like yourself, they might have children who could fall into the spectrum, whether that's autism or ADHD or both. Mm-hmm. That my family and I, so in this case, my parents and I, could just tell something wasn't adding up, because I am not arrogant, but I consider myself to be a smart person. Yet when I was in class, I was just really struggling, where I was very engaged during class. I loved taking notes. And when it came time for test taking, things just really fell apart. Mm-hmm. And so I was just getting really frustrated. And so I went and I sought out a diagnosis, or at least looked into it. And they confirmed, sure enough, like, this is textbook ADHD. So I found that out, and that was so helpful. And I think, like, a lot of your listeners might be able to relate to, I tell people that it's a equal mixture of relief and regret. Because it's this relief of, oh, thank goodness that I'm not crazy. Like, this, there is a reason for this. But then that little bit of regret also of, you know, I learned in high school that I had ADHD. Some people don't learn till their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. I even have a client who got diagnosed when he was 72. Mm-hmm. And so there's that regret of, man, if I only would have known sooner. So I found out in high school, I was able to get formal accommodations in college. So if anyone's listening, whether you have a grandchild, a child, or if you yourself are in college, please go talk to your student services office, student support services, and get accommodations. Because although I don't know what the official definition of a nervous breakdown is, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I had one during one of the exams in, like, the stereotypical college thing that you would see in a scene of a movie, where it's mm-hmm. a big auditorium style classroom. And in a very ADHD way, I had stayed up pretty much the whole night. I might have pulled an all-nighter studying to try to cram for a course I wasn't very interested in. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sitting there trying to take this test. And of course, it all looks like a foreign language. And this was a math test.
my worst subject, Ryan. Oh,
yeah. I get, like, butterflies churning in my stomach a little bit, even just thinking about it. But anyway, I could hear every click of the pen, every tapping of the foot, the ticking of the clock. So I had to excuse myself, and I'm like looking at myself in the mirror in the bathroom, like, yeah, everything's gonna be okay, just breathe. I'm like putting cold water on my face. So anyway, please get accommodations, because after that I was able to take my tests with time and a half. So if it was an hour long test, I'd get 90 minutes, and it was in a distraction reduced environment. I could wear earplugs, and man, made a world of difference. But then I think it's important for people to know that doesn't mean everything was hunky-dory after that, because I went out into the professional world thinking, all right, well, I've got this ADHD thing handled. Yeah, right. So then I got into a job in recruitment. So my majors in college were business leadership and marketing. And I come from a long line of salespeople. So I'm like, this is clearly in my blood what I'm meant to do, until I got fired from several of my jobs. And as I was telling you when we were chatting earlier, I just totally crashed and burned, where either I would start and be really excited about the job and things would, I would just get less interested, like it wasn't as shiny anymore, or the job just wasn't cut out for someone with ADHD. Like for a lot of the sales jobs, I was very much in denial, because I'm like, well, this one will be different.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't. And because they'd be these long sales cycles for like hundreds of thousands of dollar products in technology. And that just wasn't my thing.
Right.
So then one day my wife said to me, so fast forward, I find my wife, we get married. We're going to talk about that a lot here in the rest of the show. But my wife said to me, Ryan, you're so unhappy in these corporate jobs. If you could do anything, what would you do? Because I just want to see you happy. And for the Disney fans out there, I always say, for the first time in forever, which is a quote from the movie Frozen. I finally had this clarity of, wait a minute, what I want to do. I have this freedom. I get to choose. I don't have to do this certain career path that I thought I was going to do when I was 20. So I had gone to the International ADHD Conference in 2018 and learned about ADHD coaching. And it was like the perfect Venn diagram of all of my traits.
Wow.
And so I told my wife, Andrea, in that moment, I'm like, I know what I would do. I'd be an ADHD coach, helping other people just like me who think that they aren't enough or they're flawed or broken, when really that's not the case at all. And so then Andrea said, and this is one of the things that makes her such a great partner in my life, is, well, why don't you just do that then? So then I got my certification, which is no small matter in itself. It's over 200 hours of training. So it's not like I just decided, like, you know what, I think I'm going to become a coach.
Right.
And like put it on my profile. No, this was real. And then I got certified by the International Coach Federation. So now I've been coaching for about 3 years. And sometimes I have to pinch myself to realize, like, I'm not dreaming. This is real. I love what I do.
Isn't that awesome?
Yes.
Ryan, that is, like, those folks that are listening and hearing your story, whether they're autistic or ADHD or have some other type of neurodivergence, are going to say, oh my gosh, you know, how do I find that path for myself? So Ryan, I know for a lot of folks, you know, who are listening, to hear that you found the path that was most authentic for you and that resonated most with your neurotype and the way you think and who you are. I mean, that's a dream come true for a lot of folks. And, you know, I felt that way about college. I loved it because I have three degrees in social work, and I absolutely loved learning about helping people and how to do it in better ways. So I totally understand that. And I think the piece about accommodations is really important too, Ryan,
yes.
Because I know that a few of my daughter's friends did not learn about their neurodiversity until they finished college.
Yep.
And some either struggled in college and didn't finish, or finished but had a lot of struggles, which led to, you know, various mental health issues and physical issues.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important for the listeners who are trying to live their most authentic life, you know, to decide whether or not they want to be open and disclose and ask for the accommodations that they need. I think that's important. And not every schools have to do this, but not every workplace is going to be as accommodating as you might need them to be. So of course, yeah, you have to think about that before.
Yeah. I'm so glad you bring it up. We can definitely chat about that part of it too. But yes, and for anyone also who might be pursuing graduate education, it was a big help for me in that regard too, to be able to carry on those accommodations. And so to your point though, Mona, like not every workplace is as accommodating as you might hope. And I think that's purely an awareness piece that right now the narrative is changing, fortunately. I just don't think everybody's quite ready because I want to be authentic in the way that I'm presenting my story. And I actually had Forbes magazine reached out to me and said, hey, we see some of your content and we're doing a story on how, like, what are the steps to disclose to your boss that you have ADHD? Would you be interested in writing a piece? And of course, like, oh my gosh, like Forbes magazine. And talk about being authentic. I just said, as hard as this is to say, I'm going to have to decline because I don't recommend right now to people to disclose in every situation.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the fact that from even my own experience, but a lot of my clients as well, that it ends up not helping their cause. And in fact, does the opposite. Because for me, it sort of put a target on me each and every time that I went through the formal process of requesting accommodations, it always came back to bite me. Mm. Now, with that being said, my quick little snippet on this. So if anyone has not been paying attention, this is the part to pay attention to. You can get accommodations at work without having to directly disclose your disability.
Yep.
What? Coach Ryan, yep. What do you mean? Well, yep, let me tell you. You can just go to your supervisor or leadership team and say, hey, boss, I want to be a great employee for you. And in order for me to do that, I have found that I work best when insert accommodation here, where basically it could be like, I would do best if I could adjust my working hours because I think I am the most focused at from 11 to 7 instead of 9 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
Because when it comes down to it, companies are just concerned about the results. So if you have to do it at a different time, who cares? Or just like me taking the test in that big auditorium, I also had to go to my leadership team and say, hey, I don't do so well in a crowded, bustling environment. So if I could just get like a, whether it's an office or if I could go to a conference room, that would really help me. And so in those ways, you don't have to totally give it away. So I just want to make sure I say that.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. And one of the things before we knew we're a neurodiverse couple that my ex-husband did is he changed his schedule at work so that he was coming in at the time where he was most rested.
Yes.
And he was most productive. And his boss was very flexible because it's a small company. And then he worked beyond the time the store closed. He's in IT. And then he was able to work with no distractions, no phones ringing, no other people in the store. And, you know, that was pretty smart of him, you know, to be able to kind of accommodate what worked best for him and that he had the flexibility at his work. Not everybody's going to have that, but you know, right. You don't have to disclose fully what's going on as far as your neurotype, but you can ask for specific changes in where you sit or when you work, and maybe your boss will be open to that. So thank you, Ryan, so much for that.
Of course.
I think it's really, really helpful. And sometimes it's scary to ask for what you need, but I think the more we practice it, the more we are apt to get what we need to be our best and most authentic self.
I literally was writing the word authentic in my notebook as you said that, because I feel the same way, Mona, and I'm telling all the listeners, if you can be your more authentic self. I was just replying to someone on social media today about, they were asking me about the concept of masking, where you're trying to cover up what makes you a little bit different to try to, I'm using air quotes, act the way you think everyone else wants you to.
Right.
But I can just tell you, I mean, right now I'm wearing kind of a funny, like wild looking glasses and a Hawaiian pattern shirt. And I can do that. And I feel just much more comfortable being authentically me.
Yeah.
Whereas in the corporate settings I was in, this wouldn't fly.
Right. Ryan, and you're much younger than me, because I'll be 60 in a few months. And I wish I had discovered some of these things and was able to be my authentic kind of ADHD self and very sensitive self. Because, you know, I can cry like at the drop of a pin. But and my daughter and my ex-husband used to look at me like, what the heck is wrong with you? But it was part of who I am.
Yeah.
And I accept it and embrace it. So yeah, everybody who loves me and is in my life really understands who I am, and I understand who they are, and we give each other a lot of space. So I think that is really, really vital and important. And I think there are three traits we talked about that you really wanted to kind of go in depth on. And I think it's going to be really helpful for the listeners to hear how you're addressing these different traits, as well as how you're coaching others to address them and to accept them. And I'd like to start first with impulsivity, which I have tons of this. I mean, I was trying to figure out how many times my ex-husband and I moved across country, literally across country.
Yeah,
it was six.
Oh, wow.
In 30 years. So is Mona a little impulsive? Yeah. Uh-huh. So go ahead. Tell me a little bit about your impulsivity and how you've dealt with it and how you kind of coach others to do the same thing.
Yeah. And I'll say to you, Mona, what I want everyone else to hear too, which is you're not alone, because it's really nice just to know that.
Yeah.
That impulsivity is a thing for those of us with ADHD. And one of the big reasons for that is because of this lack of dopamine that we have in our brains.
Mm-hmm.
So we are literally wired differently. Our reward centers react differently than someone of a different neurotype. And so it makes sense why we tend to gravitate towards these different traits. So I was just talking with a client this morning about managing her impulsivity. So she, ironically, it matches up with your example. She's getting ready to move. Mm-hmm. She also just got divorced. And her situation was, she's like, Ryan, I tend to go wild on buying decor for the house and like redecorating everything. And I need your help to set some limits and some boundaries around that. Because boundaries, what are those? You know, we struggle with that sometimes.
Yeah.
I also have a lot of clients that have either overcome or are currently working through various degrees of addictive sort of behavior too, which makes sense. I always refer to it as kind of that desire for like sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yep.
Because we are thrill seeking, and we will have risky or questionable behavior. We'll buy things we don't need or things that we don't have the money for. And I think it's really important, especially on a podcast like yours that talks about relationships, specifically romantic relationships, that we have to address these things up front and talk it through and be open with our partners about it, so that we can make sure that we're both on the same page. Because the stats are pretty alarming and I'm sure you've probably seen a lot of these too, but how the majority, I think it's like 60, I want to say it's 68%. And I actually, can I see the book? I think it's right next to me. I'm gonna pull that up like and give you the stat from Dr. Russell Barkley. Mm-hmm. But I think it's 50 to 60% are considered quote unquote dysfunctional. And then we are three times, when you're neurodiverse, three times more likely to have a divorce, mm-hmm. or some sort of separation. And it's so tragic that this is how it is, but it's mostly because there's misunderstanding and a lack of communication within the relationship.
Amen. I could not agree more with that. And I think with those folks who are listening that wonder if they're both autistic and ADHD, or, you know, the partner who thinks they're ADHD, thinking about how you're impulsive in your most, one of your most important relationships with your romantic partner, how that impacts you. I never thought about it, Ryan. I never thought about it in my marriage. So when, you know, I wanted at the last minute to go, you know, be with friends, and I wanted to bring my, you know, ex-husband with me, or I wanted to move, or I wanted to go do something that I could immediately make a decision about. Oh my gosh, was I flooding him? Was I overwhelming him? Was I probably making him super anxious? Yet my body was getting that dopamine hit. Oh good, we're going to go to that concert. Oh good, we're going to take that trip. Oh good, we're going to spend that money on this thing I like. And he was overwhelmed, but didn't tell me, because I think he was just trying to be a good partner. And he was a good partner in those ways. He would go along with pretty much anything that I wanted to do that would create that dopamine hit. So I think the more you can talk about what you each need,
yes,
for both joy and peace, I think those are two important things. You know, what brings you happiness, but what brings you peace, can be an important conversation around impulsivity, I believe. What are your thoughts?
This is something that my wife and I talk about a lot. And the way that we try to manage this is because my wife would be considered neurotypical. She's very type A. So she plans, which is something very foreign to me. Mm-hmm. So I just tell her pretty much like, hey, just tell me where to show up and like, you know, what I need to do, and I'll be there. But with the impulsivity piece, I try to let her know, like, here's some of the things I would really like to do. Like, there's certain times where I want us to not have a plan, mm-hmm. where it's okay to say like, hey, what are we going to do for dinner tonight? I don't know, but let's try something new instead of something we've done before. Or having a time where we have a movie night at home with our kids and we don't know what we're watch until we go down there, which even something that small for my wife is like, makes her uncomfortable because she wants to just get the show on the road and get the kids to bed when we're done. So I would say just managing expectations. And in this case, it's about really just advocating for what, as you put it, I really liked that, bring you a sense of peace. Like, it's funny how could impulsivity bring you peace? But it can, if it's just, it kind of scratches the itch. Mm-hmm. And I think you probably know what I mean.
Absolutely.
And then the other thing too, and this gets into monetary, which is another monumental challenge. But one of the things we've agreed upon in our monthly budget is that each of us gets our own like pocket money, quote unquote, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. where she can't question how I spend. We each give each other like $100 amount, like an allowance almost each month. And we have a shared bank account, but it's like Ryan can spend $100 each month on whatever he wants. And so like that might be like some kind of equipment for my social media account, or getting a new app, or getting, you know, a new pair of shoes, or whatever the thing is. And she's not allowed to question that because that's what we've agreed upon ahead of time. Where you run into problems, or where people do a lot, is, hey, guess what? I bought these three pairs of shoes. It was buy two, get one free. And it's like, whoa, wait a second. You have lots of, we didn't talk about this. So getting onto the same page with expectations, I think it helps to curb impulsivity.
Yeah. And conflict and judgment and anger. I totally agree with you. And I know I've heard from a lot of autistic ADHD folks who have special interests and deep interests and hobbies that they do not hesitate to spend money on. And sometimes it can be at the expense of the family budget.
Yep.
So I'm really glad that you brought up the money piece, because that can be really critical. And I will tell you, I mean, I think for some folks, and we don't have to go deep into this, but I think impulsivity around sex for folks that are neurodivergent can be something that people are hesitant to talk about, but I think it is critical to talk about.
Well, Mona, thank goodness you're interviewing me, because I'm not going to hesitate to talk about it.
I won't either, Ryan.
because I was just looking, I told you I was going to fact check a little bit by looking at Dr. Russell Barkley's book. If anyone hasn't heard of him, so he's retired now, but he's one of, you know, the prominent researchers when it comes to ADHD. I was just like flipping through here, and risky behavior, you know, I said before, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Yes. Like pleasurable. And that could be, you know, sexual pleasure, monetary pleasure, you know, experiential kind of stuff. But yes, when it comes to sex, I play basketball a couple times a week, and one of the guys made this joke and I really like it. When it comes to a sex drive, that men are like a microwave and women are like a slow cooker.
I like that. Now we're not generalizing, but it's exactly a little bit of a joke.
As the words were coming out of my mouth, I'm like, with that being said, everyone's different. But I've said to my wife, and this is another thing that I advocate, because she has, you know, jokingly said, and whatever your identification is or whatever, it's like sometimes one partner is very interested in sex a lot of times, and the other partner may not be as interested. So I've just let her know, I am quite interested. I'm very attracted to you physically, and I would like to express that love in that way. And I also want to do that to, again, this is around the, I am very dedicated to my marriage. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the ways that it's like, by agreeing to the frequency that we want to have an intimate encounter, that's also going to help to just strengthen our relationship.
Yeah.
Because I think what a lot of people with ADHD might run into is like, well, I'm not getting it at home, so I'm going to look around and find it somewhere else. So if that's not the case, it's a good conversation to have, even though it might be a hard one.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And again, once we understand our neurotype, mm-hmm. and we understand when we are impulsive, how we're looking for that dopamine hit, we can look for that dopamine hit in different ways that aren't hurtful to ourselves or our partner. And I think that's really important for the listeners to hear, because, you know, when your partner is addicted to drugs or alcohol or some other thing, shopping, whatever, and they're looking for something with that addiction, there's something missing, you know, and so understanding it with maybe the help of a therapist or coach and finding more healthy, positive ways to get the dopamine hit can really be life-changing for you and your relationship. Yeah. So anything else about impulsivity before we go to the next one, which is distractibility?
The last thing I'll say about just kind of driving home the point of this common theme that we're talking about throughout all of these components, which is just advocate for your needs. Mm-hmm. And then you can come to an agreement. So
yeah,
no further things, Your Honor, at this time.
And I will say, for folks that find it difficult to kind of get in touch with their needs, there are so many resources on the internet. If you just Google, you know, list of needs, and then you can kind of go through them and see what are the 5 to 10 things that when I see those words, kind of it makes me smile, whether it's a real smile on your face or it makes you smile inside. I think that can be really helpful, because I think a lot of people, and I don't know if you experienced this, Ryan, you know, with the masking, pretending to be something that they were not just to fit in, people pleasing, all of those things, codependency. We may not even know what our needs are. So figuring out how to get our needs met might be difficult because we don't even know what they are.
I totally agree.
Yeah. So it's something that you can explore again with a friend, a therapist, a coach, or whatever. So let's talk a little bit about the distractibility piece, which I'm all over, Ryan. So tell me how that has manifested or did manifest for you and how maybe it's affected your relationship with your wife too.
I think I'm going to fast forward and give my tip at the beginning.
Okay.
Which is take your smartphone and throw it very far away. Because I would say that more than anything else, the biggest challenge for me comes from the dopamine fountain that is my smartphone. Because mm-hmm. whether it's a text message from a client or a comment on one of my videos or something that someone asks and I'm like, oh, let me just look that up on the internet. We have taken fairly extreme measures for me where when it's family time, we'll literally put my phone into this little, I don't know if you've ever seen these, Mona, they're little phone jails. They're like a lockbox.
No, I haven't seen
them. Yeah, so they make these. And so we have a thing where we'll set the timer for 3 hours from like, you know, 5 to 8 when it's family time. And we will literally lock my phone away because I just have total unconditional acceptance around my ADHD. And I know that it's like an alcoholic realizing like they just shouldn't be going into a bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very similar. And I'm not trying to make light at all of anyone who struggles with that. But when I have a text from a client, I am so drawn to wanting to know what it's about and how I can help them
mm-hmm.
that if my wife is talking to me about something, that text might pull me away and that's not okay.
Right.
So where it has come up, and this one, like you talked about crying at the, you know, on the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
This one always really hits home for me and makes me get kind of emotional because I was sharing earlier how I've started to find success now as an ADHD coach. And part of that has been on social media. And I'm humbled to say that I now have over 500,000 followers across my various platforms.
That's phenomenal. And it just says to me, Ryan, it just says there are so many people out there struggling, looking for community, looking for people that are like them. And I think the same thing is happening in the autistic world too. And I just, 100%. I think it's wonderful. So yeah, that's fantastic.
And so that what was happening as the business was growing and my following was growing is I started getting this really big sense of validation mm-hmm. And also responsibility of, to your exact point, like this community's coming together. I'm getting chills right now because of, I mean, so passionate about this. And I was just thinking like, these people need me.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a moment that stopped me in my tracks when my wife's name is Andrea. And she said, Ryan, and she normally doesn't use my name. She'll call me honey or something like that. She's like, Ryan. I'm like, it's like when your parents say like,
right.
Ryan James Mayer.
Yeah.
So she's like, Ryan. I'm like, oh no. Yes. Yes, honey. And she's like, can I be honest with you about something? I'm like, yeah, of course. She's like, sometimes I feel like the people on your phone are more important to you than me. And man, did I just want to melt into a puddle and, you know, go under a rock.
Mm-hmm.
Because, oh my gosh, it is the exact opposite. The whole reason I'm doing this is to support her, support our family. But yet, as I was standing there staring into my screen, I couldn't deny how it appeared.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I started looking for a support team to help me manage my social media.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, all right, that's it. I can't have the most important person in my life feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it's honestly come up the most. But on a much lighter note, and this is a kind of a something that the listeners could apply in their lives, whether, again, whether you are autistic, ADHD, or whatever your neurotype is, I have found that I am pretty much powerless, very similar to when my phone's in my pocket. I feel powerless when I'm in a place that has other screens. Like, you know, for example, if you go to, into a restaurant or a bar and there's like a big screen TV with sports on it or whatever, I really can't help myself from being drawn to the movement of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I have found is very helpful, and I remember this specifically, we have a really like a neighborhood place here in our town, and Andrea and I went out on a date and there was a lot of screens. So I said, honey, would it be okay if we got a corner booth and I sat with my back to everything else? Because I just want to be, you're the only thing I want to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, of course. So she was, you know, very happy to oblige. But that's a tip I would give everyone is like, if you're in a place that you know you're going to be distracted, like be proactive about trying to prevent that.
That's a wonderful, wonderful tip. And thank you so much for sharing that about the lock box or, you know, a little jail for your phone. That's awesome. Because I think, again, you know, we have a big age difference between us. And when my ex-husband and I first met, we didn't have cell phones. You know, we didn't have all those distractions. In fact, there was a time when he and I shared a pager, believe it or not. Shared it, or a beeper, whatever you called it at the time.
Right.
You know, so we did not grow up with all those distractions. But understanding that your relationship with your romantic partner, your wife, your husband, your lover, whatever term you use, is, should be one of the most important relationships that you have. I always say your relationship with yourself should be at the same level or maybe even a little higher, because if you don't love yourself and you don't love yourself, it's very difficult to be in a healthy relationship. But that's a whole other podcast. But knowing how distractible you can be and finding ways when you want to be with your intimate partner and fully have your attention on them, finding ways to do that, oh my gosh, again, can be a game changer in your relationship. Same thing with your children. You know, if you're constantly on your phone when you're supposed to be watching them at a concert and they look into the audience and they see you on their phone, on your phone, that does not feel good too. So,
well, and Mona, it's the same way, even more dramatically, at home. So Mona, I don't think I've mentioned this yet on the podcast, but my wife and I have three young children, three under the age of six. So these are very formative years for them.
Right.
And I don't ever want them thinking back on childhood, like, oh yeah, like my dad, he was always on his phone or he was always working. So for me, it's so important, one, to be really efficient during my workday so I can be fully present. And two, getting that phone away so that the kids know, hey, I want to be present. I want to be where my feet are. And I just came up with this phrase. So everyone write this down. Make moments matter. I've been telling my clients that lately because it's so easy to say, well, yeah, I'll be right there, kids. Like, I'm just checking this thing. Well, they start to notice that. Even my kids will notice, like, hey, dad, like, come on, stop being on your phone. I'm like, oof, okay. Like, I really got to put my phone away.
Right, right. Oh, that's so important. So, so, so important. And I know we talked about this a little bit before we started recording. Your partner is not a mind reader, right? So if you know that you are very distractible and you're going to a restaurant where there are 86 screens, you know, and you need to sit a certain way so you can give your partner, you know, your full attention, have that conversation, you know, and in any other areas of your life, because if we assume, you know what happens when we assume, right?
Yep, I do know.
Yeah, we make an ass out of you and me, for those that don't know, but I'm sure everybody knows. And so I made so many assumptions in my marriage, and I know my ex did too. And so the more we can talk about what we need and what works for us, both partners, the better communication you're going to have, the better date nights you're going to have, the better life is going to be. I so agree with that. So anything else about the distractibility piece before we go on to the third area, which is hyperactivity?
I promise that it's not standard for me to always have to have the last word, but I did think of one more thing that I think is a really good takeaway for all the listeners. And this is another thing that I tell my clients, which is keep in mind that when you say yes, you also say no. Mm-hmm. And let me explain what I mean by that is, you know, that little example I just gave about when my kids say, "Hey, Dad, get off your phone." When I say yes to my phone, whether that's answering a message or watching a social media video or whatever the thing is, that means I'm saying no to everything else, my kids, my wife, exercising, whatever it is. So just remember, because it's easy to justify, especially when you have ADHD and you get pulled into something, it's easy to just, well, I'm just going to do this for a few minutes. No, you're not.
Right.
And so if you're saying yes to that thing, then you're saying no to all of the other things. So when it comes to distractibility, that's what I'd invite people to remember.
Right. And so we all have to determine, I think that's wonderful. We all have to determine what our priorities are yep. mm-hmm. each day. And it may even be moment to moment. So, you know, is your priority your partner, your children, or work, you mm-hmm. know, during 9 to 5 or, you know, 10 to 7 or whatever it is, and being able to communicate that. Or if you're working, you know, on a special interest or a hobby, you know, is it going to be 2 hours? Is it going to be 5 hours? Again, communicating those things and coming up with agreements that work. If you're in a partnership, if you're in a relationship, if you're in a family, there's going to have to be give and take, have to be in a healthy relationship. That's Mona's, you know, soapbox. So let's talk about hyperactivity because, and you can see some of the things that probably, or you can guess some of the things that impacted my marriage. So hyperactivity, so there's a little bit of the impulsivity and the hyperactivity. Yes, Mona changes jobs every 2 to 3 years. You know, she can't sit still for very long. I used to tell my ex-husband, "You are the only thing that I have done for more than 3 years besides being a parent." You know, we were married for 30 years. Sometimes it shocked me. But you know what I realized, Ryan? I realized that my like core value, and mm-hmm. this is probably helpful for the audience to hear, one of my top core values is relationships. Whether it's my friendships, my relationship with my daughter, or, you know, an intimate partner relationship that I'm in, that is such an important priority and value for me to have healthy relationships. So, yeah. So let's talk about hyperactivity. Tell me a little bit about how that impacted you or impacts you and your relationship.
Even as a certified ADHD coach, it's important for me to say, I don't have all the answers because these three things, impulsivity, distractibility, hyperactivity, three of the core symptoms and challenges of ADHD, many times they sort of blend together, like the lines are blurred a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so like, as I was thinking before we started about hyperactivity in my marriage, like some of it is a little bit of all three, because the one example that came to mind is just having fun with the kids. Like I'm just being goofy and like doing silly voices or like, you know, doing very childish things like doing a funny dance or jumping around or whatever, that could be seen as impulsivity, but it's also hyperactive because it's not my wife's style to be goofy. That's just like not her way. Typically she can do it when she's playing with the kids, but it's not natural to her. Whereas when I think about my signature strengths of creativity, curiosity, love, zest, gratitude, those kind of things play well with children and having mm-hmm. a child mindset. So the hyperactivity is, it shows up where she knows that if we're in sort of a challenging moment with the kids, she'll defer to me and be like, "Hey, I don't know what to do." 'Cause she's trying to logic her way out of it. And she'll say like we need your creativity. And so I'll do something kind of hyper where I'm like, and again, this is where it's kind of impulsive and hyper, but "Hey, everyone, let's run in circles." here in the house, like, and they're like, yeah. And like, so it leads to one of the ideas that I had, which is having healthy outlets. So you talked earlier about people who have ADHD or autism that get hyper-focused or fixated on a certain hobby. And that's totally fine. Like, I know I have a good friend who's very into Legos. That's his thing. And it's very calming. I know a lot of people with autism and a lot with ADHD that are very into that. I had a client yesterday tell me, and he's ADHD, not autistic. He's like, I'm so relaxed when I do Legos because I can just get lost in that. So anyway, that's an outlet, and it's good as long as it doesn't creep into the impulsivity of, I'm going to buy this $400 Lego set. Or distractibility of, I want to go work on my Legos instead of doing my job. So those kind of things. But if you have a healthy outlet, like I'm raising my hand, for example, yes, Ryan in the front. Hi, thanks. One of my hyperactive outlets is I play basketball a couple times a week. So that really allows me to get that energy out, but then it also energizes me for the rest of the day. And for those of us with ADHD, one of the top recommendations I give is to have some form of exercise.
Yeah.
And I think that people, and myself included, I used to get very caught up on like, well, I have to be working out and bench pressing and doing Romanian deadlifts. And it's like, no. Just go on a walk.
Yeah.
Like even getting out of the house, getting moving. Right now I have a standing desk. So it allows me to be able to move around, and I'm kind of fidgeting with one of my fidget toys over here. So just having ways to deal with that. And I'm trying to think of like marriage wise specifically. Oh, I know. Okay. This is kind of a funny example.
Yeah.
there's two that I can think of. One is I always want to be the one that makes the birthday card. So like Andrea, my wife, will be in charge of getting the gift for the person. And I'm like, I'll do the birthday card. So I just love doodling and like drawing block and bubble letters and things like that.
Yeah.
So I love making a very creative homemade card for someone because like, you know what? Anyone's going to see like a Hallmark card off the shelf. I'm like, you paid $4.25 for that. I'm like, look at this thing. And it's like, you know, craft paper and markers and streamers and whatever.
Awesome.
But the one time, well, more than once, but where it kind of came back to bite me is, Andrea be like, Ryan, no, we need to leave now. So like, I know you have your little arts and crafts project here, but like, we got to get to the actual party. I'm like, okay, yeah. So there was that. And then the other one is I like to have things labeled. So back me up on this, listeners. Have you ever gone to a friend's house? This literally happened to me yesterday. I can't even make this up. Where you go to a friend's house for the first time and you have to play that game of, which cabinet do I open to try to find the hidden garbage can?
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, if you've never been to their house, I literally was like pulling open all these doors. Oh, that's pots and pans. That's silverware. Hey, John, where is your garbage? Oh, it's over here. I was like, that's not where I would have thought. Right. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be proactive and thoughtful. I'm going to label the recycling closet and the garbage can, so there's no confusion. Otherwise afterwards, I'm going to be like literally sifting through the garbage can, pulling out aluminum cans. Like, I don't, you know, that's a thing for me.
Yeah.
And Andrea said, like, she gives me this list of tasks to help to get ready for the big party.
Yeah.
And one of them was snow blowing because we live in tropical Cleveland, Ohio. And so we had people coming over and we had gotten just walloped with a big snowstorm the night before. So instead of going out and making sure that there was a safe walkway for our guests, I was hyper-focusing on making really nice looking recycle cans here sign. And Andrea's like, Ryan, what do you do? She came out of the shower like, thinking I'm going to be outside. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, making signs. What does it look like I'm doing? And she's like, no, our guests are getting here in 15 minutes. You haven't snowblowed anything. So fast forward, our friends are pulling up and I'm literally so embarrassed. I'm snow blowing our driveway. I'm like, hi everyone. Just 1 second. Just stay in your car.
So your hyperactivity was focused on the the labeling of the recycling and garbage. And what you needed to focus on was getting the snowblower out so your friends would have a safe place to park. I gotcha.
And it's like, this is where it's the blurry lines, because that gets into prioritization, but it all kind of, I call it fingerprints of ADHD. Like it's all together. So and even saying the story out loud, it's funny. I can laugh about it now. But hearing the words, it's like, how could I think that that was the right decision? But that's where, again, it's so important for those of us that are wired differently to have that acceptance. Because what my wife and I have learned to do now is Andrea will prioritize the list for me. So that she'll be like, okay, could you please first snowblow? And then once you get it done, once you're showered, once you're totally ready, then you can make as beautiful of a sign as you want. And I'm like, challenge accepted.
There you go. I love that. There's excellent partnership and teamwork. I love it. I love it. I love it. So I know we've talked about the three kind of hallmark traits of ADHD. There's another thing that you had shared that I think might be helpful to the listeners, and that is the honeymoon hyperfocus period that you experienced in your relationship.
Yep.
Because I think there's also a similarity with autistic individuals, or at least many have shared that with me. So I'd love to hear your perspective about how this happened and how you attribute it to your neurotype.
So many people can probably think back on when they first started their relationship. And in fact, just yesterday I had a client, I asked him to think about some of his favorite memories. And one that came to his mind, he's like, wow, I haven't thought about this in a long time. He said he thought about the first time that he and his wife ever kissed. And it was really cool just to see him have that memory. But that could be considered two totally different people. Now that he and his wife have been married for 15 years, they have a 6-year-old daughter, like things definitely change. So Melissa Orloff, who's a very well-known author when it comes to ADHD and relationships, she's written the book ADHD Marriage and The Couple's Guide to Thriving with ADHD. And I love her work. And she talks about how many times people can feel like the non-ADHD partner might think, man, this was like a bait and switch because, you know, the person was head over heels. I was head over heels for this person because they were doting on me, and little did they know, like the person was hyper fixating on them and doing impulsive things because they wanted, you know, they were very caught up in the courting phase. Mm-hmm. But it's very easy to take a step back and removing emotions from it, just looking at the facts. People with ADHD will be very interested in something, or tend to be more interested at the beginning, and then that fades away. Mm-hmm. So just like you and I talked about earlier, like things would get quote unquote less shiny for my career. The same thing, if we're not careful, can happen in our relationships. So that's why, you know, I called it the hyperfocus honeymoon, where eventually it's like, well, we're just kind of into our routine now, you know, like all right, we're married. We've had our all-inclusive honeymoon to Jamaica. Yeah, man. And now it's like, hey, did you remember to take out the trash? Mm-hmm. No. Can you go do that? Fine. And it's like, you have to make sure that you are careful not to fall into complacency once you get past that first thrilling part of it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And again, this goes back to that dopamine hit that we're looking for. You know, it's so exciting to be in love, and it's so exciting to learn about your partner. It's so exciting to plan the wedding or to go on the honeymoon and to be with all your friends. And even, you know, maybe the first few years of your marriage or relationship, if you end up moving in together, if you're just in a relationship, you know, things are still shiny. And then when you start to get into, and I'm doing the air quote, a rut, you know, and it's just the normal day to day, if you don't take time to go on exciting date nights and to learn and explore together and find new interests, then yeah, it will be easy to be distracted and you'll look for other things to give you that dopamine hit. Again, Mona switching jobs every 2 to 3 years. Mona and her ex-husband going across country 6 times for 6 different moves. Not something most people do.
Right. So,
you know, when you recognize yourself in things that other people are sharing who have a different neurotype than you thought you had, or that have the same neurotype that you have, you can begin to understand yourself better and don't have to fight it, accept it, understand it, and understand how you can be the best partner possible. Because we can't change others. We can only change ourselves. And
ooh,
I think
that's right? a good one.
Yeah. And I think when we change and we become better partners and kinder and more compassionate towards ourselves and our partners, things can begin to change. I'm not saying that it always does, but it can. So one of the other things that you had shared that you might like to touch on in relation to your neurotype was the 5 love languages. And so I'd love if you want to give like a summary, and it doesn't have to be all 5, but you know, what plays out in your relationship or some of the folks that you've been working with in relation to the 5 love languages.
I'm so glad that you're willing to go a couple minutes long, because believe it or not, we go over time, but this is so, so important, Mona. And in fact, I was telling you right before we hit record, I can't make this up, but how it just keeps happening where I just talked with a client about this yesterday. She called me. She's like, hey, I'm sorry. I know we're not scheduled to talk for another few days, but something's going on in my marriage. And I'm just wondering if you can help. I'm like, yeah, let's go. What's going on? So she told me the story. Both she and her husband are ADHD. So, you know, that's definitely a factor. And so I asked her, have you ever heard of the 5 love languages? And she said, you know, I think so. I think our therapist may have told us about that. So I said, well, let's review them really quick. So there's physical touch, quality time, acts of service, words of affirmation, and gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And she and her husband have very different love languages.
Mm-hmm.
So what was happening was they were both essentially communicating the same thing to each other, but they were saying it in a, again, air quotes, different language, in this case, a different love language. So they were just totally missing each other. So once I explained that, like she told me a certain scenario, I explained it back to her with the love languages filter. And she's like, oh my gosh, you're exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we kind of practiced like, how could you do it a little bit differently? And for example, my top love language by far is words of affirmation.
Mm.
And that's something that I, again, all of this, like we've been talking about, Mona, is about really advocating for yourself and your needs. And I tell my wife, hey, I need to know that you're seeing how hard I'm working, or that you can just let me know like how much you appreciate what I'm doing for the family, or things like that. Not that I want her to be inauthentic, but for example, this morning I came in and she had left me a little love note on my desk in our home office. And it says, hey, congrats on completing that big project, Ryan James. You did awesome work. Oh, you did awesome wordsmithing. She has bad handwriting. thank you for your support of our family. I love you. Love, Andrea Marie. So that just, Dr. Gary Chapman, who wrote the book, he refers to it as the love tank. You could think of it as like a love meter, but like that, just, my love meter is like off the charts now, just from that one little note. Mm-hmm. Whereas if she would have like, let's say, vacuumed the floor in my office, which would have been an act of service, that would have been like, okay, cool. I don't care. Why'd you vacuum my office? So it's just even though it seems kind of silly, it's just like, you really need to know and what your partner, and this can apply to any relationship really, not just romantic. So figure out what are your partner's primary love languages and how can you speak to them more in that way?
I think I talk about the love languages in some other podcasts, and I love the example that you gave because it's very specific. Mm-hmm. And in my marriage, we both had as a top priority love language, physical touch. And so our sex life for 32 years was wonderful, even when we were on the verge of divorce. So yeah. that always surprises people when I say that, but we both had that same love language. So that Perfect. Was great.
Yes.
But I had quality time as a very top. It was, I think, almost tied with physical touch. And then his was acts of service. I didn't know how to yep. speak acts of service.
Yep.
And the way in which I wanted him to speak quality time didn't always make sense to him.
Totally.
So yeah, we needed that translator. We needed that coach to intervene and say, okay, so this is what, you know, Mona is looking for, and this is what, you know, your husband's looking for. And it would have helped us avoid so many misunderstandings, right? And so I think when the listeners hear this, and you can go take the love language test.
Yeah, it's free. It's out there. Mm-hmm.
And they also have an app now. I think it's called Love Nudge. I have it on my phone.
Nice.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So what it will do is once you know your partner's love language, you can actually get a nudge on the app that'll remind you to, you know, like your wife did, you know, put a note on a post-it,
yeah.
you know, and put it in your partner's car or whatever, or take time for, you know, a date night or whatever. So it's really helpful. So Ryan, this has been a great conversation. And I know there are a lot of listeners out there that are in relationships with mixed neurotype.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's autistic and ADHD or autistic ADHD, and then the partner is ADHD, solely ADHD. And I think this is going to be so helpful because not only have we normalized so many things, but we've added a little humor.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd love if you could share one. You said you have a kind of a course that you're offering, and there's a discount for those folks that are listeners. And then let folks know the best way to contact you.
Thanks for giving me the chance to do that. And again, I just want to say thank you to you, Mona, for giving me the chance to be here. I just think the work that you're doing is so important to spread awareness. And as we were just talking about, it's so important for the listeners to know you're not alone in this, because it can be so overwhelming and confusing and just feel like, man, no one understands me. But there is a community of support out there. And I would love to connect with any of you. You can find me on social media. My screen names, my handles on there are ADHD_coach_Ryan. And I think on Instagram, it's ADHD_coach_Ryan Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R. Or you can look up my website, which is ryanmayercoaching.com. But I'm putting out new content every single day on pretty much all the various platforms. And the biggest thing is I just want to have a conversation. And if you feel alone like I did, please reach out. Me and my team are ready to help. And one of the things I told Mona that I wanted to do for the listeners here is to offer this course. I really specialize in the workplace. So I have a audio course. You don't need to download an app. You don't even have to have a username and password that you're going to lose and have to re-enter. So this is a text message based course. It's the first of its kind. I'm super proud of it. And so we're going to have the link in the notes, but you can go to my website and find it too, if whichever's easier. And then the discount code to use is NDLOVE30. And that's for 30% off. Normally it's $100. This is a 10-day course that would normally take me 10 weeks to teach someone in person. And it's all boiled down and you get it in a self-paced text message form. But again, I'm just here to help. And the reason I even created this course was so that anybody out there could get my coaching for a fraction of the price and just get the help that they need.
Awesome. Ryan, thank you so much for the kind words about my work. And thank you so much for the work you're doing. I think when we have lived experiences that have taught us lessons that have helped us be our most authentic or more authentic selves, and we're able to live a life that gives us, like I said earlier, peace and joy, which I know I'm living at almost 60. It took a long time, but it does change the way we function as an individual, in our relationships with romantic partners, in our families, and at work, and in life in general. So thank you for all you're doing. And I'm excited to share a little bit of your story and the things that you share with, you know, lots of people on social media and in your coaching work with the Neurodiverse Love community. So thank you so much for sharing a part of your day with me and my listeners. I really appreciate it.
Mona, it's been my pleasure. We'll